Hello everyone, my name is Elijah Davis. This is Bellator, Apostolic Secretary of Congress, Mount Zion, the 12th Town of Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is August 14, 2016, already Zulu 12, 2020. We'll start our first service on this first day of the week with a song that I've written entitled, Lead Me Through the Rock That Is Higher Than I. Lead me to the rock that is higher than mine, I'll forever be. Indebted to the sun, the very one who came to set men free. For all the life in this world I have to live is but a stepping stone. For the greater heights I have to attain is never done alone. Lead me to the rock, oh, lead me to the rock, lead me to the rock that's higher than mine. Lead me to the place of the Savior's feet, lead me to the mansions in the sky. Man on a mission came to this world, sort of on the slum. Stranger and strangely a stranger could be seen passing by. Oh, the moon shone bright, but the heavenly lights of all the starry host. For the brightest smile of them all is the one that marred the most. Lead me to the rock that is higher than mine. Lead me to the fountain that never runs dry. Lead me in the path by the river of life. Lead me to the message in the sky. Put a star pointed to the newborn king as he lay in the manger strip. But he's a descendant of the one created from the Adam's rib. As the time rolled on, many stories are told about the man of the Galilee. How he changed the water into the wine, made the blind to see. Lead me to the rock, oh, lead me to the rock, lead me to the rock that's higher than I. Lead me to the place of the Savior's feet, lead me to those matches in the sky. For this is the man for all time on whom many come to rely. For the witness of many merry told right before their eyes. For he lived and he died and he rose again with the victory over the grave. With the proven once and for all that he had the power to save. Lead me to the rock that is higher than mine. Lead me to the fountain that never runs dry. Lead me in the path of the river of life. Lead me to those branches in the sky. Now leave me in the desert, barren and dry. Vanquished forever and ever. Brother, lead me to the fountain that never runs dry. Lead me to the rock that is higher than mine. Lead me to the rock, oh, lead me to the rock. Lead me to the rock that's higher than mine. Lead me to the place of the Savior's feet. Lead me to the mountains in the sky. Oh yes, lead me to those mountains in the sky. Kingdom of Heaven, Larkin and the Ten Virgins, this is part two. We're now entering into Matthew 25. Start with verse 1. Then shall the kingdom of heaven be likened unto ten virgins which took their lamps and went forth to meet the bridegroom. This verse begins with the word then, indicating that it takes place at the time that the Yeshua comes, as spoken of in the preceding verse. In other words, at the time of Yahshua comes, the kingdom shall be likened unto something. The kingdom of Yahweh as a crown kingdom does not exist today, as you know. So, he wrote this back in about the 1950s sometime. And then what is meant here by the kingdom? It is referring to the people that are candidates for the citizenship in it. Who are the subjects for the kingdom of Yahweh if they are not the church? Then the people comprising the church of Yahweh shall be likened unto 10 virgins. Matthew 25:2-5. And 5 of them were wise, and 5 were foolish. They that were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them, but the wise took oil and their vessels with their lamps. While the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. When this happened, the church is likened unto 10 virgins, and the ones that were foolish had their lamps all right, but they did not take with them more oil than were in the lamps. They therefore had no extra reserve of oil. What does oil stand for when used in a lamp? It gives light, which illuminates your way, does it not? In the spiritual realm, it is the understanding of the prophecy of the Bible that alone causes you to know where you are going. Only 5 other virgins have extra oil. They had availed themselves of the extra oil so that they could refill their lamps in case the oil that was in them should be used before they reached their destination. For the light that came in 1844, the light in the path forward, was the truth of the judgment of the dead, which began then. Those that received this light called themselves Seventh-day Adventists from that time on. In the words used in this parable, they filled their lamps with the oil which represented the judgment of the dead, message. Then came the tarrying time. It is true that the Millerite expected the Yahshua to come to earth for the saints on a certain date in 1844, and he did not appear. They concluded, therefore, that they must have made a mistake, and they were no longer known by a name. It was the Seventh-day Adventist that expected the Yahshua to come not on a certain day, but in a generation, in a certain period of time. Since he did not come, however, they therefore concluded that the Yahshua delayed his coming. Matthew 25:5-6. While the bridegroom tarried, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight there was a cry made, "Behold, the bridegroom cometh, go ye out to meet him." The cry to meet the bridegroom comes after the time of tarrying. Matthew 25:7-12. And all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps, and the foolish said unto the wise, "Give us of your oil, for our lamps are gone out." But the wise answered, saying, "Not so, lest there be not enough for us and you. But go ye rather to them that sell, and buy for yourself." And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and they that were ready went in with him to the marriage, and the door was shut. Afterwards came also the other virgin, saying, "Master, Master, open unto us." But he answered and said, "Verily I say unto you, I know you not." An announcement is made that the bridegroom cometh. All the virgins are awakened by it. If the announcement were to come from the general conference, you know that all the members would fill their vessels with oil and would have it. The facts are, though, that the cry does not come from there. All trend or lamps, we are told. What is the implication in that? We may conclude that while the cry goes out, the people trim their lamps with the oil that is in them. In other words, they begin to apply their message to the change in the circumstances or event. But what happens? The lamps go out. that indicates that what we had expected to happen does not happen. Instead, something else takes place. Seventh-day Adventists are expecting the war of the Armageddon to take place next. When they see something different come instead, they will become confused. They will then realize that the oil in their lamps, the judgment of the dead message, is not sufficient to guide them through this situation. Then they will long for the extra oil, the additional life, the message of the judgment for the living, which had previously been available unto them, but they had failed to obtain it. Thus, feeling their urgent need of it, they will demand it from those who have it. But it will be too late. By the time they arrive at the bridegroom's chamber, they find that he has already entered and closed the door. They knock, they plead, thinking he will enter, but he will surely open the door and welcome them inside. But instead, what do they hear him say? Verily I say unto you, I know you not. And the door remains shut. Probation has closed for them. Let us now identify the different personalities brought in. Here is a bridegroom. But where is the bride, and who are the virgins? The cry was, Behold, the bridegroom cometh. This cry was not to the bride, but to the virgins. The virgins can only represent the guest. Who is the bride? Let us turn to Revelation 21 for help in identifying who is the bride. Revelation 21, 9 and 10. And there came unto me one of the seven angels which had the seven vials full of the seven last plagues, and talked with me, saying, Come hither, I will show thee the bride, the Lamb's wife. And he carried me away in the spirit to a great and high mountain, and showed me that great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from Yahweh. The Lamb's wife is the city. Well, better to describe the Lamb's wife, if not by it just being alone the city, but the Lamb's wife is in the city. That's a more correct and accurate way to describe it. The Lamb's wife is in the holy city. John saw the foundations and the walls and the buildings of the holy city. He did not see the people. And the people represents the Lamb's wife. So this is what I'm talking about. For he called the city the Lamb's wife. Yeah, he called the city because it housed his people, his bride. If the city is with the people in it is the Lamb's wife, and if the virgins are the ones who are to meet the bridegroom, then who is the bride? Well, it's the people and the city. The kingdom must be the bride. No, the kingdom are the people that represents the purified kingdom. They are the first fruits that represents his bride, the 144,000. For the people of the Yahweh's church are the guests. That's your laity, okay? So the people are the laity. They're not the bride. The 144,000 is the bride. And are represented by the virgins. Well, they are represented as being with the virgins, and they are represented in the class of the virgins because they're not defiled with other women. In other words, the false doctrine of other churches. They are born pure Israelites in the house of Israel, and they never been taught anything differently. The same thing is true in this parable as we find in the parable of the king going in to examine the guests for the marriage, one of whom he found without the wedding garment on. And that was the leader, that was the angel of the candlestick, and at the fulfillment of this prophecy applies to Brother Johnson. Those whom he examined are the guests, those at Gilead Center. To summarize then, the people are the guests. The kingdom is the bride, and Yahshua is the groom. Okay, so this is a confused explanation of this parable. because it applies to Gilead Center, and the guests there are the ones that was purged out right along with the one with the man without the wedding garment on. So they didn't have it either. Moreover, in the parable we are studying today, did Yeshua come to the earth where the 10 virgins were? Yes, he did. For he came where both the unworthy and the worthy virgins were. If he came to the earth and had a door of his own to shut or to open, that would indicate that he had a place of his own. Then he will come to his kingdom, and unless the guests enter on time through the door, they will be disappointed when they knock, and the door will not be opened unto them. Since this coming of the bridegroom is obviously not the visible second coming of Yahshua to take to heaven his people, who shall meet him in the air, we should be able to find in the Bible something more about it. Let us now turn to Matthew 25:31-32. And I'll say one thing, Vichy Hall sure did make a mess of trying to explain the bridegroom and the bride. That shows you how far he was as far as advancing toward the kingdom. He was a long ways off. He was very far off from it. That's the reason why he had to be taken out of the way early, because the further he went with this subject, the worse it got. And it's a sad commentary, but that's just the way it is. That's the way it was. Matthew 25:31-32. When the Son of Man shall come in his glory, and all the holy angels with him, then shall he sit upon the throne of his glory, and before him shall be gathered all nations, and he shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats. Did these verses say that the Son of Man is going to come down on a cloud to where the just risen dead alone with the living saints will meet him in the air, as in 1 Thessalonians 4:16-17? Is that what we just read? No. It says that here, that at this coming, he will gather all nations before him, and then he will sit down on a throne and separate them. He will put the goats on the left and the sheep on the right. Moreover, he will tell each of the two classes what they have or have not done that caused them to be thus judged and separated. Do you not see clearly why we need the extra oil, the message of the judgment for the living? We as Adventists have been preaching the judgment for 100 years or more, and you never even for a moment did we see that these parables are talking about the judgment for the living. If we never saw it before, we should now be able to see clearly that the judgment included the separation of the righteous and the wicked. We cannot say that the judgment we are reading about in the Matthew 25 is the judgment which is to take place during the millennium, because his people are not then among the nation. There is positively no escaping the conclusion that it takes place in the time of the judgment for the living, when both the righteous and the wicked are commingled on the earth. Since, moreover, this work of the separation goes on among the people themselves, it is clear that it is not a work to be done in the heaven, but it is a work to be done on the earth. Then shall two be in the field, the one shall be taken and the other left. Two women shall be grinding at the mill, the one shall be taken and the other left. Matthew 24:40-41. Some call that the rapture, but it is quite different than what they think it is. Now we plan to see that Yahshua in Matthew 25 is talking about the judgment for the living. And in connection with this subject, we find that Malachi says the very same thing, namely that after a messenger has prepared the way, Yahshua will suddenly come to his temple to purify it, Malachi 3:1. Well, who is this messenger? This is antitypical Elijah. Okay. whoever he may be in the people's minds, this is an antithetical Elijah. And this antithetical Elijah the Tishbite. When he comes, it is not to judge the dead in the heavenly sanctuary, but to judge the living in the earthly sanctuary. Well, what do you have going on today? You have a separation of the good and the bad right now in the earth, all over the world. You're having a separation of the good and the bad. The bad, for the most part, are being destroyed the very moment that they're judged. Their judgment come up any second. The wicked, and they are wiped out, just annihilated without a moment's notice. That's your separation of the good from the bad. And if the Yahweh is going to sit on his throne on the earth, Yahshua is going to sit on his throne on the earth and gather the nations before him and judge us and separate the people, where specifically is Yahshua going to sit? In Daniel 2, we find a description and interpretation of the great image which the king of Babylon saw in a dream. We as Adventists, and for that matter, not only we Adventists, but other Bible students as well, recognize that this image represents the nations of the world from Babylon's time down to today. We also understand that the two kingdoms represent the nations in existence today. Now let us read Daniel 2:44-45. And in the days of these kings, the toe kings, shall the Elohim of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. And the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and shall stand forever. For as much as thou sawest that the stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it break in pieces the iron, the brass, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great Elohim hath made known unto the king, which shall come to pass hereafter, and the dream is certain, and the interpretation thereof sure. Daniel here describes how the earth's governments come to their end, not how the earth comes to its end, for he interpreted the stone to be the kingdom, and it is Elohim's kingdom that will smite the nations, not Yahshua's coming from heaven to take up the saints, as we Adventists have taught. For the Jeremiah calls the kingdom Elohim's battle axe, Jeremiah 51:20. What plainer language could be used to say that the kingdom is going to be set up before the nations come to their end? The trouble some have believing this is not because of the language the Bible used, but the trouble is with our preconceived ideas that were built up throughout the years, and the only way we can drive out our former erroneous ideas is to believe just what the Bible says. Now let us turn to Ezekiel 36:17-19. Son of man, when the house of Israel dwelt in their own land, they defiled it by their own way and by their doings. Their way was before me as the uncleanness of a removed woman. Wherefore I poured my fury upon them for the blood that they had shed upon the land, and for their idols wherewith they had polluted it, and I scattered them among the heathen. And they were dispersed throughout the countries according to their ways, and according to their doings I judged them. Okay, it says, this says that because of the evils of the Elohim people dispersed from throughout the country, Ezekiel 36:20. And when they entered unto the heathen, whither they went, they profaned my holy name. When they said to them, these are the people of Yahweh and are gone forth out of his land. They profaned his name when it was said of them that they are the people of Yahweh gone out of his land. Is it not profaning Elohim's name for the Gentiles to have driven Elohim's people out of their own land and become rulers over them? After Elohim had so miraculously brought them there and set them up to be the greatest kingdom, even his kingdom on earth, could not the Gentiles feel that they had successfully defeated Elohim's purpose for them? Elohim's people having purpose for them, Elohim's people having brought this great curse upon himself, through their disobedience, thus profaned Elohim's holy name in the midst of the heathen, where they went. It has been brought up to me many times that the Gentiles took Elohim's people captive because Elohim was not able to defend his own kingdom, and therefore he was unable to fulfill his promise to Israel. Thus was his name profaned among the heathen, all because of the disobedience of Yahweh's own people. That's what profaned his people among them, is their disobedience. Ezekiel 36:21-22. But I had pity for my holy name, in which the house of Israel had profaned among the heathen, whither they went. Therefore they say unto the house of Israel, thus saith Yahweh Elohim, I do not this for your sakes, O house of Israel, but for my holy name's sake, which you have profaned among the heathen, whither you went. It is because Elohim could no longer tolerate the sins of his people that he, through the Gentiles, had to disperse them. The heathen did not know that though, now Elohim says he will do something about it for his holy name's sake, not because his people are good. The next verses state plainly what he will do. Ezekiel 36:23-24. And I will sanctify my great name, which was profaned among the heathen, which you have profaned in the midst of them. And the heathen shall know that I am the Yahweh, saith the Yahweh Elohim, when I shall be sanctified in you before their eyes. I will take you from among the heathen and gather you out of all countries and will bring you into your own land. Under those who ask how Elohim can defend his name, now since the heathen have dispersed throughout the nations the ancient kingdom of his people, we need only to read to them what Elohim here says, that he will gather his people back from all countries and show them and the heathen that he will yet honor his name by sanctifying himself and them before the heathen. Ezekiel 36:25-27. Then will I sprinkle clean water upon you, and you shall be clean from all your filthiness, and from all your idols will I cleanse you. A new heart also will I give you, and a new spirit will I put within you. And I will take away the stony heart out of your flesh, and I will give you an heart of flesh. And I will put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes, and you shall keep my judgments and do them. Since all of this takes place when Elohim gathers his people from among the heathen, then no one can dodge the fact that unless we go into the land where the cleansing will take place, we will not be cleansed and we will not receive the new heart and Elohim's spirit. Well, if you read Ezekiel 20, verse 32 to about 40, you'll find out a different picture of this. He says he gathers them out of all countries when they have been scattered and brings them into the wilderness of the people. And there he pleads with them comfortably, as when he did when he brought them out of Egypt. He brought them into the wilderness for 40 years. And then he calls them to pass under the rod, that's a 40-year period. And into the bond of the covenant, that's a 40-year period. People don't realize that. Shepherd's rod, it brings them under the rod. He brought the Adventists under the rod in 1930-1970. Then from 1970-2010, he seeks to bring them into the bond of the covenant. Okay. We hadn't seen this before. Since all of this takes place when Elohim gathers his people from among the heathen, then no one can dodge the fact that unless we go into the land where the cleansing will take place, we will not be cleansed and we will not receive the new heart and the Elohim spirit. No, we're brought under the rod here in the wilderness and into the bond of the covenant here in the wilderness, and then we get rid of all of our sins. We coming into the bond means that we have been purified and cleansified and we have been sanctified, holy in His sight. This is what qualifies us to go into the land. The Yahweh says we have to go in the land first before we can get all this done for us. But you have to do that first to even go into the land. Well, they did under Joshua. They had to come under the bond of the covenant into the bottom of the covenant there, so that they could cross over with Joshua with the Ark of the Covenant, sanctified, purified people. Didn't mean that they stayed sanctified and purified after they got into the land, but nevertheless, that was a qualification for getting into the land. But I can see B.T. Hollis' point where he says that he's going to give them a clean heart in the land once they get over into there, and I can see why. But they can be accepted as clean enough to go into the land by just confessing their sins and getting their sins blotted out at the atonement. Then they can be carried over into the land just from that admission. After we have been taken from among the heathen, Elohim will sprinkle clean water upon us to cleanse us. By this we are to understand that until Elohim gathers us from among the heathen, we cannot be clean. After he cleanses us, we will be without spot. The judgment time, we must remember, is the cleansing time as well as the separating time. The judgment for the living takes place when Elohim cleanses his people from all their filthiness and puts within them his spirit and hearts of flesh. This work is to be done for his people after Elohim has returned them unto their own land. Okay, this chapter tells us that we will never be clean until Elohim gathers us from all the heathen and makes us what we ought to be. The devil, however, wants to convince us that there is to be neither a land to which Elohim's people are to go, nor a cleansing. Let us read further. Ezekiel 36:28, "And you shall dwell in the land that I gave unto your fathers, and you shall be my people, and I will be your Elohim." Now, I'm going to tell you something here. He's talking about ancient Israel here. He's talking about ancient Israel, about resurrection them. They were descendants of their fathers. And this is the one that he's talking about, placing them back into their own land. That is not my original land. The United States, where I was born, is my original land. Okay? That's different. The land that Elohim gave to our fathers is Palestine, because the children of Israel were dispersed, his name was profaned, and to show that he indeed rules over the earth and the people, he will gather out his people from the nations and sit them right back in their own land and sanctify himself in them. Ezekiel 36:29-30, "I will also save you from all your uncleanness, and I will call for the corn, and will increase it, and lay no famine upon you, and I will multiply the fruit of the tree, and the increase of the field, that you shall receive no more reproach of famine among the heathen." If the land of our fathers in this chapter means heaven, there would be no heathen in existence to witness any more reproach of famine. And thus, the last clause of Ezekiel 36:30 would be unnecessary and meaningless. Ezekiel 36:31, "Then shall you remember your own evil ways and your doings that were not good, and shall loathe yourself in your own sight for your iniquities and for your abominations." And Elohim, after Elohim has returned his people to their own land and changed their hearts and puts within them his spirit, then will they hate their own evil doings. They will be genuinely sorry for them. This is the revival reformation which Elohim calls for and which he himself will work in his people. Now let us turn to the next chapter, Ezekiel 37:15-24. "The word of Yahweh came again unto me, saying, Moreover, thou son of man, take thee one stick and write upon it for Judah and for the children of Israel, his companion." Now, this son of man is untypically Elijah. And this is the one speaking to you now. So, this is one that he's commanded to put, take these two sticks and write upon it. For Joseph, the stick of, see, he says, take two sticks, and then take another stick and write upon it. For Joseph, the stick of Ephraim, and for all the house of Israel, his companions, and join them one to another, and to one stick, and they shall become one in thine hand. And when the children of thy people shall speak unto thee, saying, Wilt thou not show us what thou meanest by thee? Say unto them, Thus saith Yahweh Elohim, Behold, I will take the stick of Joseph, which is in the hand of Ephraim, and the tribes of Israel his fellow, and will put them with him, even with the stick of Judah, and make them one stick, and they shall be one in mine hand. And the sticks whereon thou writest shall be in thine hand, and before their eyes, and say unto them, Thus saith Yahweh Elohim, Behold, I will take the children of Israel from among the heathen, where they be gone, and will gather them on every side, and bring them into their own land. And I will give them one nation in and I will make them one nation in the land upon the mountains of Israel, and one king shall be king unto them all. So we're going to have this antithetical Elijah is actually a king, because he's antithetical David in the spirit and power of this Elijah. So he's actually a king. And there shall be no more two nations, neither shall they be divided into two kingdoms any more at all. Neither shall they defile themselves any more with their idols, nor with their detestable things, nor with any of their transgressions. But I will save them out of all their dwelling places wherein they have sinned, and will cleanse them, and so shall they be my people, and I will be their Elohim, and David my servant shall be king over them, and they all shall have one shepherd. They shall also walk in my judgments and observe my statutes and do them. The ancient kingdoms of Judah and Israel were dispersed. Now, however, Yahshua says that he will bring them back to their own land and join them into one kingdom, where he will sanctify himself in them. When Elohim does this with his people, the heathen will learn who Elohim is and what are his purposes in the earth. I believe that the subject of the kingdom is one of the plainest of all subjects. In fact, the scriptures dealing with it actually need no interpretation. We believe what the Bible says, for it plainly states just what it means, and is in perfect harmony throughout its prophecies, parables, and symbols. The only trouble there could be is that we have put an erroneous idea into our minds that there is to be no kingdom of Yahweh on earth before his second coming, and that idea has to be taken out, for it is unscriptural. Daniel 2 talks of the kingdom of Yahweh, saying that it shall not be left unto other people, that it will stand forever and will grow and fill the whole earth. Okay, though there will be only 144,000 cut by the Elohim's own might and taken to Mount Zion, yet they as servants, and as the first fruits, Revelation 7, 1-8 and Revelation 14, 1-5 are together in the great multitude which no man could number, Revelation 7, 9 and 10. Thus will they enlarge the kingdom that is finally to fill the earth. That is what the Yahshua purposes to do with his people. If we would be among the wise virgins, we will not fight against Elohim setting up his kingdom, but rather we will study about it and thus procure the extra oil. We will work for it, and we will also certainly with understanding, pray as Yahshua himself taught us, thy kingdom come, thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. Okay, that brings us to the end of that study, I believe. Okay, let's see. Well, let's see. Let's go ahead here a little bit. Some more writing here. O Yahshua, I have promised. O Yahshua, thou hast promised to all who follow thee that where thou art in glory, there shall thy servant be. And Yahshua, I have promised to serve thee to the end and give me grace to follow my master and my friend. Johnny Bode. Thus saith Yahweh. He says, thus saith Yahweh, I will cause the captivity of Judah and the captivity of Israel to return, and will build them as at the first, so we are to continue. And I will cleanse them from all their iniquities whereby they have sinned against me, and I will pardon all their iniquities whereby they have sinned and whereby they have transgressed against me. It shall be to me a name of joy, a praise and an honor before all the nations of the earth, which shall hear all the good that I do unto them. And they shall fear and tremble for all the goodness and for all the prosperity that I procure unto it. Thus saith Yahweh, again there shall be heard in this place, which you say shall be desolate without man, without beast, even in the cities of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem that are desolate, without man and without inhabitant, without beast, the voice of joy, and the voice of gladness, the voice of the bridegroom, and the voice of the bride, the voice of them that shall say, praise the Yahshua of hosts, for the Yahshua is good, for his mercy endureth forever. And of them that shall bring the sacrifice of praise into the house of Yahweh, for I will cause return the captivity of the land, as at the first, saith the Yahshua. Thus saith the Yahshua of hosts, again in this place, which is desolate without man and without beast, and in all the cities thereof, shall be an habitation of shepherds causing their flocks to lie down. In the cities of the Vale, and in the cities of the south, and in the land of Benjamin, and in the places about Jerusalem, and in the cities of Judah, shall the flocks pass again under the hands of him that telleth them, saith the Yahweh. Behold, the days come, saith Yahweh, that I will perform that good thing which I have promised unto the house of Israel, and unto the house of Judah. In those days and at that time will I cause a branch of righteousness to grow up unto David, and he shall execute judgment and righteousness in the land. So who is this he that's going to execute judgment and righteousness in the land? It's antithetical David. Okay, and in Jerusalem shall dwell Satan. This is the name wherewith she shall be called Yahshua or righteous. Jeremiah 33:2-16. Tell him, love runneth faster than our feet, the meat esteeming back to him, and peace and kisses dumb our shames, nay, and puts on the best robe, bidding angels bring it forth. Okay, that's, today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts. True, we are establishing our headquarters on this mount that is found in the prophecy, but our stay here shall be very short, for he will finish the work and cut it short in righteousness, because the short work will the Yahshua make upon the earth. Romans 9:28. Now, V.T. Aldous is speaking for himself and the shepherd Rod there at Old Mount Carmel, back there in the 50s. And his time is very short at the least back then. And so he's speaking for himself, but this everlasting kingdom that is set up here in Liberty Hill, Texas, this kingdom is eternal. Okay. It might be interesting to Elder G to know that the naming of our camp, Mount Carmel Center, came about in the same way as the naming of our publications, the Shepherd Rock. But we did not know beforehand that it was in the prophecy until after our attention was called to Micah 7:14 and Amos 1:2. In the prophecy of Amos we read, the Yahshua will roar from the Zion and utter his voice from Jerusalem, and the habitations of the shepherds shall mourn, and the top of Carmel and shall wither. Amos 1:2. With a few comments on the above scriptures, any Bible student will recognize at a glance that it applies at the time of the end, as explained by the gospel prophet, and it shall come to pass in the last days, that would be in the 12th parabolic hour that we're in right now, and that is still in front of us, that this prophecy is yet to meet its fulfillment, that the mountain of the Yahshua's house shall be established on the top of the mountain, and shall be exalted by the hill, For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Yeshua from Jerusalem. Isaiah 2:2-3, which the language of Amos is, utter his voice from Jerusalem. Looking to this same time, Joel puts it as follows. And Yeshua shall utter his voice before his army, for his camp is very great, for he is strong that executes his word. For the day of Yeshua is great and very terrible, and who can abide it? Joel 2:11. As Amos says, the habitations of the shepherds shall mourn. It is obvious that Amos' prophecy is yet future. For the word habitation places is in the plural form, which cannot be applied to one shepherd's habitation, denominational, but to all that be in existence at that time. The term shepherds means, as understood, the same as the ancient men which were before the house, the ministers, Testimony for the Church, Volume 5, page 211. Note that the shepherds are not themselves to mourn, but their habitations, their houses. That is the membership of their churches, which fact reveals that it will be thus at the time when the sleeping multitudes in the churches awake from their spiritual insensibilities and find that the shepherds, whom they have implicitly trusted for their salvation, have deceived all those who follow them. The prophet Jeremiah in the following words explains that this wailing by those who are thus deceived will be at the close of the probation, for they shall say, the harvest is past, the summer is ended, we are not saved. Jeremiah 20. That is, after the harvest, the time in which they could have been saved, they will realize that the probationary time has closed. Then the habitations of the shepherds shall mourn, and the top of Carmel shall wither. Hence, before that time, the top of Carmel must have been green with much pasture. Otherwise, there would be nothing to wither. That is, though Carmel has now plenty of pasture, present truth, when probation closes, and so I'll say that Carmel only has this here good truth, the present truth, until the probation closes for the Seventh-day Adventist Church, because she's part of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. When the Seventh-day Adventist Church comes to its close, as far as them having anything to do anymore with putting forth truth out there to the world, that took place in 2002 at Kermit, starting at the Passover. Their probation closed. It shall be the deserted wither. Okay, so for says the spirit of prophecy, in the time of trouble we all fled from the cities and villages. Early writings, page 34. That has nothing to do with this fulfillment of this prophecy, and that V.T. Hollis doesn't know that it doesn't have anything to do, but indirectly it may have a whole lot to compare to our time, because as soon as the Adventist Church is finished, they'll have nothing at all, and they don't have anything to feed their people in the way of present truth. The Seventh-day Adventists are just strictly, they are just out there floating around on their reputation. They're resting upon their laurels. Oh yeah, they have Ellen G. White's publications that they sell, that they make a lot of money from, but they don't know what's in them, they don't know why they're, other than the fact that they're just selling them because they have the right to, and it makes them money, and that's the only reason why they're selling them. This shall the top of Carmel wither, and those who do not take heed to the word, today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your heart. At length there will be alarmed that their opportunity for accepting the truth has slipped away. Well, the top of Carmel withered for the rodents when the rod period ended in 1970, and then rodents offered an olive branch and he rejected it, and so he has no one to blame but himself. Then in their hasty, frenzied effort to acquaint themselves with the present truth, which went forth from the top of Carmel, their surprise they will find that Carmel has finished its work, its inhabitants removed and probation closed, at which time the inhabitants of Carmel shall but repeat, the harvest is past, the summer is ended, we're not saved. We have nothing for thee. So, Brother Johnson was offered the olive branch in 2002, and he turned it down, so who does he have to buy it? Then it shall come to pass that they shall wander from sea to sea, and from the north, even to the east. They shall run to and fro to seek the Yeshua of the word of Yahweh, and shall not find it. In that day shall the fair virgins and young men faint for thirst. Behold, the day is come, saith the Yahweh Elohim, that I will send a famine in the land, not a famine of bread, and not a thirst for water, but of hearing the words of Yahweh, Amos 8:12-13:11. Oh, what a disappointment that will be. And now mine eyes, with the eyes of the lamenting prophet, do fail with tears for the destruction of the daughter of my people, because the children of the suckling swoon in the streets of the city. Thy prophets, teachers, have seen vain and foolish things for thee, and they have not discovered thine iniquity. They turn away thy captivity, but have seen for thee false burdens and causes of banishment, Lamentation 2:11-14. As the Yahshua has never left his people in darkness, we find the work of the shepherd's rod clearly outlined in prophecy throughout the Bible, and the only reason that our leading brethren cannot see the truth in it and do not know who hath appointed it is because they are trying to see it through the dollars and cents instead of through the spirit of the prophecy. For the eyes of the church, through which only can they see the truth and the true state of their condition in spiritual blindness, poverty, and wretchedness, and a need for eyesight, for what man knoweth the things of a man, save the spirit of man, which is in him? Even so the things of Yahweh knoweth no man, but the spirit of Yahweh, 1 Corinthians 2:11. But now, as the Spirit of the truth is come, he will guide you into all truth, for he shall not speak of himself. But whatsoever he shall hear, that shall he speak, and he will show you things to come. John 16:13. For without the Spirit of Yahweh, no man knoweth the things of Yahweh. The Symbolic Code, Volume 1, Number 14, August of 1935. So V.T. Hollis was telling them the Spirit of truth is come now. Well, the thing is, that's so sad, because it only lasted with him for another 20 years, and that's all. That's all he had to run with the Spirit of Truth from the time he made that statement there in the Symbolic Code, Volume 1, number 14, August of 1935. And so it's so sad. Then Roden then had a 15-year period that he could have certainly learned how to continue on with the unfolding of the scroll. Everyone's without excuse, given the opportunity to be a leader, and yet they go astray. They're their own fault. They're their own worst enemy. Because Yahweh's given every gift that there is, every help aid that there is in the that can be given from heaven to keep him on the straight and narrow, and so forth. And so that's the reason why heaven is without blame. All right, that ends our study there on Symbolic Code, volume 11, number 12. And we're on 55 minutes here. 55 minutes. We're just about the end of our study, so a little review, I guess, is in order. What did we learn about the kingdom of heaven likened unto 10 virgins? Well, number one, the kingdom of heaven is within you. When it doesn't come by observation. That's in Luke 17:20. But the kingdom of Yahweh is within you. And it is brought up the fact that in Daniel 2, 44 and 45, that in our day, this stone hewn out of the mountain without hands that strikes the image on the feet and grows into a mountain fills the whole earth is the beginning. I mean, that prophecy means its fulfillment is the beginning of this everlasting kingdom of heaven that has come down from heaven in the sight of men. Here in the 12th parabolic hour, our probation still lingers. And this is who we represent. And so we are to be about our Father's business representing this everlasting kingdom of heaven. For we're the only people in 6,000 years that have been preordained to bring up the very end of this kingdom. I mean, the very, very end of the 6,000-year period. And to be able to be the orchestra conductor. To be the conductor of this great last stand. Of this great orchestra that's going to organize every movement and put them in their order. So we have to be 100% on the job, as the Heavenly Father's called me to be and set up. And so therefore, this brings in Vested, this hour, you can contact us at the 11th hour, call us, number 11, click on our audio archives. We're going to close this now, service with a song. Sing Me Another Gospel Melody by Elijah David, August 14th, 1998, this song was written. I'm going to close this service now with this song. In the twilight of the evening, when the shadows begin to fall, before I lay me down to sleep, I try to recall sound of the good times, the hard times were always there. You could depend on an answer to your prayer. Sing me another gospel melody. Sing me what my heart longs to hear. Thought the good time followed the river as it flowed. Sing me the things I love so dear. Rain makes you happy, sunshine makes you glad. Things weren't always easy, things weren't always bad. You always had the best time, God's holy Sabbath day. You could feel His presence when you kneel to pray. Sing me another gospel melody. Sing me what my heart longs to hear. About the good times, follow the river as it winds. Sing to me the things I love so dear. I say to you, old Satan, it's the time you run along. I'm putting out your fire, I'm singing a new song. I'm marching to the tune of a new gospel beat. When I'm through, I'm telling you I'll be on Golden Street. Sing me another gospel melody. Sing me what my heart longs to hear. Got the good times, follow the river as it winds. Sing to me the things I love so dear. Y'all with the tender mercy and an all-seeing eye, keeps watch on His vineyard, guarding it day and night. Seeing that none will perish, all things are made right. For the day is fast approaching for that eternal flight. Sing me another gospel melody. Sing me what my heart longs to hear. That the good times follow the river as it winds. Sing to me the things I love so dear.